meeting order for the Board of Regents committee meeting. Welcome everyone. We'll start with the affairs committee report.
Good morning. We have a very exciting item to go discuss and action item. In anticipation of that, we wanted to move an information item up so we could have more knowledge whenever we discuss an action item. So at this time, Jennifer, can you please talk to me and transportation overview?
Good morning. I'm Jennifer Wilson, Director of Quarantine and Transportation Services. It's been a while since I've been talking to you in this room. Our department is now 10 years old, and a lot has happened over the past 2 years. A lot of good things have happened on the Department of Transportation side, but as we look at the future, we definitely have some challenges that we're trying to overcome. Next slide, please. As we, I can do that.
You got a remote channel right there.
Okay. During the planning process this year, we began with some student surveys in the fall, and then working with Student Government Association. We followed up with some focus groups with students. We really wanted to understand what the responses we got in the survey meant. So thinking a little bit more into understanding the students and really what their expectations are. We asked about driving habits and preferences, plans of service and enhancements, and then using those focus groups to understand what the responses meant. We also worked with our standing parking and transportation committee, which has campus-wide representation, faculty, staff, students, special events, someone who's taken these athletics. Folks that understand that if we make a parking decision, what should be the impacts across campus. But as we look at the parking issue on campus, it really has two components. There's the parking side of it, so there's the physical inventory of parking spaces and how those parking spaces are allocated, the faculty, staff, students, officials. But there's also the demand side of the equation. These are the choices that people make. These are behaviors. To park or not to park? That is the question. Kind of borrow from Shakespeare a little bit. Supply changes constantly, particularly on a campus like this. You take a look at this building that was built on a parking lot. Take a look across the street next door. Take a look at the downing elevations, the DBS building. Campus has been changing in wonderful ways, but it has changed how we manage parking and where that parking is located. The demand is really dependent on the user group. And if we take a look at, our three primary user groups, these are kind of the core of the groups that we're trying to serve on a daily basis. Faculty, staff, that are here to teach classes to support the university. The commuting students living off campus and the residents living on campus. Faculty staff, we go back to 2006, and we sell between 2,000 and 2,050 permits every year. It's predictable. That number doesn't change at all. Commuters, if we take a look at the percentage of students living off campus who buy a parking permit, that's relatively stable. 43-45% of students living off campus who are trying to park on campus. Now, this didn't end for this year is because we physically restricted so many students. We reached the point this year where we said, we don't have room for all the years. Here are some alternatives available to you. The residents, on the other hand, fiscal year 07, 72% of residents park on campus. And then, for whatever reason, it was the economy, the recession hit, it was more international students living on campus, it was students making other choices. Residents moved a lot, and they moved from 72% in fiscal year 07 to 63% last year. So we were watching this beautiful 8-year trend, less residents from the parts of campus, which really allowed us to adapt to the changes we were experiencing on campus. Because we had less residents using less parking, more parking available to commuters. Until this year. And then they didn't get the memo. They just totally missed it. And we went up to, you know, 65% or 67% of student directed parking on campus. That was 250 parking spaces. That was 250 parking spaces we were counting on using for 2 years. And that's part of the reason why this year was so difficult for us as a campus. So as we're looking to the future, like, let's start addressing this demand a little more deliberately. What can we do to change this? And as we look at this, there are some things that we can do. We're really good at transit. We adjusted our transit routes last year. We rearranged some of our parking lots and the routes to serve them better, to serve the commuters better, to serve the residents better. Our transit system is up 26% over last year. We're going to carry close to 700,000 passengers this fiscal year. So good changes are happening there. But we have some tweaks to make. If we introduce our Green Line route, our Green Line is our shopping shuttle. It goes off campus, takes students to mall, Walmart, Target, Kroger Shopping Center, Barnes & Nobles. You get that at 2 o'clock in the afternoon instead of 6 o'clock when it starts now. Give students a little more opportunity to go to jobs, you know, take care of some of their errands without having to ride in their cars. When we ask students what they use their cars for when they're living on campus, shopping was number one. By far. We can provide that for them. And we can tip the major areas in Oregon where they're going. Evening Red Line, we're going to tweak that one a little bit. Right now, with the way the commuter parking is on campus, with the service that we have, we can get them up to Paulson in the evening really well. But getting back to their car, they have to go to Walmart. And this is not really where they want to go. So we're going to extend our Red Line to make it more efficient for commuters to get back to their cars in the evening. We're also looking at developing new parking rides. If we don't have room to put commuters on campus, where can we go close by to develop a parking ride service to get into campus? We'll also be introducing congestion pricing. Our permit fees right now are very low. We compare them to other institutions. We compare them with other benchmark institutions that we have. Our permit fees are very low. So the choices that students are making, when they hear $90 for a parking permit, they go, okay, great, where do I get one? It's not, well, let me think about this. Do I really need to bring my parking permits? So with congestion pricing, we're going to be charging more for the more convenient location. Residents living on campus are going to pay more than the commuters. The last thing we're going to do is we're going to introduce a car-free program. And we're actually... we've had 3 ATP sessions now, the last 4 of them. So we've been talking to parents about this program, and we're getting some feedback. What we're doing is, there are a lot of transportation services that we've been kind of introducing over the years, and we're bundling all of those together, and we're saying, if you enroll in this program, we're going to provide these services to you at a deeper discount than what you get as a member student. So it includes our chopper transit system, which is free and open to the public. We just want to remind them that's available. It'll include the GoBG Transit semester pass. We work closely with the GoBG Public Transit. It gives them another opportunity to get off campus to areas that our transit system doesn't have. We're going to provide complimentary enrollment in the Enterprise Car Share program. Currently, we have 2 cars, Enterprise Car Share vehicles on campus. This is where students can rent a car by the hour. It's been a good program. We're only about a year and a half into it. We're hoping to grow the program quite a bit. 1 car can equal 16 parking spaces for students who choose to leave their car behind. So this is a great way for us to kind of shift people to make a different choice. Discounts to a national airport, similar for Greyhound bus service. Teaming with a bicycle shop at the Customs Center, we have a complimentary tune-up students being invited. And then the one that the parents are really interested in is a $250 scholarship. We'll have a drawing for 3 lucky winners for that. I've heard that the parents are good. I've got 2 siblings, you know, 2 children I'm sending to college. One of them's bringing car, the other one's getting in this program because I want that scholarship. So going back to the supply and demand and the physical inventory of parking spaces. As we look at how the campus has changed over the past 10 years, and this graph particularly talks it, or takes a look at the parking supply for students, the parking demand for students, representative for the students. So in fiscal year 06, there are 5,600 parking spaces that were available to students. This is fiscal inventory. And as we go through time and campuses change, that number has dropped to 4,800. 800 parking spaces, you know, through all of the campus changes, have now disappeared off the campus. And that's equivalent to parking construction too. So when we talk about having a real parking shortage, it's very real. And combined with that is the demand side represented by the students. Fiscal year 12 and fiscal year 15, you add up the parking permits we sold compared to the number of parking spaces available. Those students look a lot like 150% permits sold for parking spaces available. Fiscal year 12, we did okay. We were tight. We were feeling everything. But everybody who wanted to park on campus had an opportunity to park on campus. Fiscal year 15, this was not the case. And the difference was the housing students was a larger percentage of the people parking on campus. Commuters stay on campus 5 hours on average. Housing students pretty much stay. So this change, where we had more residents using more of the parking, meant that less parking was available for commuters. And that's why we had the problems that we had this past fall. As this translated to commuters, we're looking, you know, kind of shortening the scale back from fiscal year 2010. Because of the commuters are the low man on the totem pole at this point, and they're being displaced by other, we're putting priority on faculty, staff, on residents. This means that 800 less spaces available to commuters over the past 5 years. Part of that has been the physical loss of parking spaces. But part of that is also because there have been other user groups that have been moving ahead of them. And that's what makes it so challenging for the community. So as we look at increasing our parking supply as part of our solution, you know, again, addressing the demand side, but ultimately we need to look at the supply side. It's not only is it affecting the commuters on a day like today, where we're hosting ATTs, our ability as an institution to host larger events without completely disrupting campus has really been reduced. So when we're hosting the Focus on the ETU event in the fall, we're bringing 800 prospective students to campus. We're displacing faculty, staff, and students from where they usually park. When we're hosting the KHSAA football championships in the fall, we're significantly putting an impact on where people are parking on a regular basis. And the alternatives that we're providing, we are providing alternatives for everybody. They're not what they really want to do. So in the short term, new parking lot, we're looking at developing some property, hopefully along the Russellville Road corridor, which is where the students have really identified, this is where I would prefer to park and use a parking lot service. Something that came out of the surveys and the focus groups, and in understanding, it's like, we have 200 spaces available on South Campus. Just come hop on a bus. We can get you to campus. Why don't you want to do that? And the student said, number one, I can't see my car. It's 20 minutes away. I'm not comfortable with that. Two, they said, I use my car as a locker. I go to my car between classes. I change my books out. I get rid of my coat. I don't need any more for the rest of the day. I pick up my lunch. They're using their car as a locker, so that doesn't work in a parking lot. The other thing they told us is that I work off campus. And so if I have to hop on the bus and take 30 minutes to get back to my car, it takes me longer to get to work after I get out of class. So the convenience of it, the convenience of parking for the students is important. So we wanted to take a look at parking. Can we develop additional parking close to campus? You know, we're fairly landlocked as an institution. We've got residential areas adjacent to us, we've got railroad track across the street, creates some challenges for us, we've got the development that's happening downtown in the historic district. In order to get 800 parking spaces, we need something the size of the Kusum lot, which is a huge property for surface parking, and then we just don't have that available adjacent to campus. So we can look at park and ride. We're hoping to develop park and ride service for fall. something close by that we can serve with a single bus. But long term, we really are in a position where we need additional capacity in our campus and parking. And when we take a look at the physical inventory that we've lost over the past decade, plus what's planned in the future, how many business will be sitting on top of the parking lot, then we really have 1,000 spaces as a tread water down there. It's not really so much looking in the future and what the potential enrollment growth or growth of the program is, what those needs are. It's really a tread water number for us as an institution. To be able to not only provide parking for students going to, but be able to support the events that as an institution we like to do. So with that, I will open the floor to questions. I like to say that, managing parking is a bit like, putting together a puzzle where they catch on all the pieces. it's always changing. And, for someone who is probably creates a target-rich environment. So, can I answer any questions for you?
What kind of analysis have you done from a pricing standpoint, using pricing either as a deterrent or to discourage people from bringing the cars, say, the residents? It's just too expensive.
We did ask that specific question to residents this fall. And what we found was that when you got up to about $330 for a parking permit, that was the point at which they started to change their behavior. So it was a pretty high price point.
And what impact did that have on enrollment of students staying at 30K University?
Now, that I did not ask, and I would totally defer to Brian Meredith for any concerns on enrollment.
It's hard to look at that variable in a vacuum in and of itself, because you've got tuition, rooms, board, books, you got all the other variables, and we're trying to keep all of those price points at a competitive level in comparison to other universities, and Jennifer can give you more information on how we compare with other universities in Kentucky or elsewhere, benchmark information, it's also good to receive. So it's more important that we track the accumulated total cost of attendance as opposed to getting outside of a comfort zone at any given price point within that make up that total. So I'd hate to push the envelope on one price point that might make some sense if that brings the total cost of attendance to a crosses over a threshold that could affect this with unintended consequences.
Well, that same question applies to faculty staff.
I've not asked that question. I asked it of residents.
But you did share something. I can circulate this around.
Yes.
But here's a.
Yes.
What they said on faculty staff parking fees, how we compare to reserve parking fees, gated parking, premium parking fees, et cetera, for faculty staff. So, Gil, let me start this with you, and it might be helpful. This is for faculty and staff, if that might be helpful.
I think at the end, it may have students as well.
Yeah, there may be some student information there as well. So Jennifer's anticipation of this presentation and discussion, she's prepared a lot of data that you've seen really boiled down to the salient points here that I guess it's not to embarrass her, but we hired Jennifer 10 years ago.
2004.
From the University of Georgia, and she has just done an incredible job of managing a very complex dynamic where supply and demand has to drive the strategies, and she's really helped us create alternatives and sustainable alternatives, I might add.
And I could talk to that a little bit with the plan that we introduced this year and for commuters, because we reached the point this year where we said, I'm sorry we don't have room for you on campus, but here are the alternatives that we have available to you. So on the transit side, we introduced bus stops at all campus housing locations. So the Columns, Campus Evolution Village, Houston Avenue, those two are getting really good ridership. But in partnering with OVG, we actually funded a second bus on their route that serves the off-campus housing areas behind the Kroger Shopping Center. It's a fairly dense off-campus student housing area, and we've had really good response from the students living there also. So we've been kind of looking at more of, we're trying to provide access to everybody. Parking is certainly part of that equation, but if we can get you to campus another way, here are the other options that we see.
Congestion pricing, we talked about a little bit earlier. What we're finally doing is using some economics to put a big disparity between the parking on the South Campus where you ride the bus for $50 and now the new price for like students living on the main campus for $220. Before it was just $90, there's no reason to even take it. So if we keep spreading that over years, that's certainly has some effect on people's decisions, and we have clear spots still in some decisions. And so it can also help let people decide if they really want to put priority on spending money on their
property. And the other thing that we've tried to do is focus more on developing the options and the choices for people to let them make the choices for themselves as to what really suits them the best. We've been trying to avoid the, by policy, this route cannot park on campus. And you know, we have 700 freshman commuters. You know, one of these things that we frequently hear is, okay, you got a parking problem, let's start banning freshmen. You know, that'll solve it. And it can create more problems than it solves. We do have 700.
And my response to that, by the way, is if you're going to ban somebody, ban juniors or seniors. Freshmen typically need a car more than juniors or seniors because they're maybe in their first job that they have to have. There's a lot of we're not interested in banning cars for any students.
No,
let's be clear about that. But if you do it for freshmen, then you do have a market dynamic that you have to overcome that other campuses within. We don't want to create a recruiting disadvantage in the marketplace by not allowing an incoming student to bring a car. So I'd rather deal with the problem of parking than deal with further complicating our enrollment challenges.
Yes, sir.
First of all, thank you for the report. Okay. One of the things I noted on this one, which I had a chance to look at earlier, is we kind of look at ourselves also in electrical benchmarks, and most of our benchmarks are not private institutions. But when you look at that, it's pretty clear our charges are on the board, the students, faculty, everybody. And I'm not here to suggest we need to raise fees. but I have another concern. I don't have any question that more parking would be great. I'm impressed with all the things that have been done, the process and all the incentives. And I know that the Parking Transportation has tried, and maybe I know SGA has tried. Everybody has tried to get students to maybe not have to bring so many cars to campus. And I'm kind of amazed last year at the 400 and some odd skirt. I mean, y'all were going down every year.
Down.
And all of a sudden last year, it went way up. It kind of made me wonder if we've made it so convenient that we actually encourage them to bring their cars. For me, it's not about little parking be helpful. And hopefully with future enrollments, the enrollment trend will turn around a bit, and you'll see ourselves having an even stronger base than perhaps a bit in the garage. But right now, to me, it's the overwhelming message from the work your office has done and the SGA is it's about convenience. And everybody would like to park next door to where they're living. And I kind of laughed when you said about the lockers. Maybe if you put some lockers in there. but my concern is that when you look at the last 4 years where our enrollment has gone down roughly 870, and you look at our parking spaces at 407. I mean, our enrollment has gone down at a greater rate than our parking spaces. And it seems to me that it's about relative priority. Parking is important. But if we do this, the parking fee alone will constitute 17.6% of next year's increased cost to students. And I know I'm jumping ahead, but $171 more next year, I think is what I put in there. And maybe 17.6% of that, $30, will go just to parking. And with all of the needs on this campus, it seems to me that to make the priority decision, you have to ask, if we're going to do this, what are we going to give up? And I would kind of ask that. And, I mean, what is it that we want to substitute? If students going to pay $30 more for parking, that's $30 more. The other point is that I really hate to see this across the board, too. Regional campuses folks will be paying this. I know you couldn't afford to charge just people to use it because it would cost them half as much to park as it costs to take a class, and that's not reasonable. I don't disagree that parking is important, but I would like to see us postpone consideration of this and see what happens with your efforts to do the short-term, your system with the short-term parking and more incentives. Are there some more things we can do to help especially recognize that maybe a little walk wouldn't hurt? And I'm hoping, I know in all of our marketing, and I may be wrong about the narrative, but I don't think we normally market convenience of parking. And we are more convenient. I mean, that's a plus to us. We're more convenient than most Kentucky campuses. And I think that's a plus. But I would really hope that we wouldn't do this right now, that we give ourselves time to let the enrollment stabilize and see where we're going and try some of the other alternatives for another year. Just last comment, I couldn't help but say to myself, I wonder if we've ever done any studies on retention of freshmen in relation to parking. I mean, if you should get the park close, or is that really contributing to retention? I don't know if we want to encourage them to have such convenience to get to work. That, you know, it's convenient here. But I'm worried about the cost and the relative cost.
Jennifer, could I respond to some of that? One of the reasons that we had additional students living on campus that brought cars is that, if you might remember, we opened an apartment complex on campus. There were 106 students who were once living off campus who returned to campus. So there's about half of that served. We have increased the number of, juniors and seniors live on campus who previously would have left and gone off campus. That was 120 that were in the apartment. So now we're up to 225 of that surge that took place last fall. I'm not one of great research and data, but everything in higher ed tells us the longer a student stays on campus, the higher probability they are to graduate. So our housing program has been successful, and it is keeping our students living on campus, which increases graduation potential. And those students differ from our students of many years ago. They work early in their college career, but yet stay on campus now and have greater potential to graduate. So parking is significant to this group of students. Our commuting students, they too are in the working world. City of Bowling Green would probably collapse without the student workforce. That's a reality. The other reality, if we can all think back to what happened when you turned 16, what were you excited about? With a moment, I'm going to bet you were excited about getting keys to the car, and that hasn't changed. These students are mobile. If we force them to not be mobile, we're forcing them away. So I think it is important that we make parking available to them. Otherwise, they go somewhere else.
We kind of got a little out of order, but does anybody else have any more questions just for Jennifer before we start to discuss the action item?
First of all, I agree with Howard. We consider ourselves as a community. This could be an economic engine to keep more people on the campus, to provide more revenue in revenue-producing areas, more attendance at basketball, football, more theater, more participation will be taking place on this campus if we provide parking for students and visitors. So I mean, we need to think of this as a long-term solution to short-term issues. Another comment and question, actually, was there any exploration done with the Student Life Foundation as a source of partnership? Dr. Angel was quite creative in 1998 or 99. Gary, help me out what day that was.
In 13 years, I think.
13 years. Probably the first country I mentioned this in sport before, but to privatize our dormitories, which a lot of soothsayers says that wasn't a good idea, now it's been a fantastic success and being modeled over other universities throughout this country. We are on the cusp of doing something similar here to demonstrate that we are about our campus. And we do that increasing a lot. I would almost say, are we building adequately? Would be my first challenge to the group. You know, are we only building minimum, and we know cost of construction will go up? So,
right. So
my question would be, one, Student Life Foundation, have they been involved in this possibility since Howard just mentioned about that increase? And two, are we building adequately with this plan? And the third question is how does that fit with our master plan long term?
So there's three questions. That. So I can back you up on a couple of those that
yeah.
I may be looking more familiar with.
So in order, so the first question, have we had any conversations with Student Life Foundation? We haven't necessarily had a meeting sitting down across the table and say this is what we want to do and can you help us with the partnership in that. What I can say is that in talking with Brian Fuster, it's always been, he's been willing. You know, and it's been that, hey, if there's ever an opportunity, let me know. So that's way above my head.
We'll address one and then two and three. But one, not on this particular project for the Student Life Foundation, because this is not Student Life Foundation land, and we have to go through a dynamic, get the land transferred. So we got other fish to fry with Student Life Foundation partnerships, like the Alumni Square parking garage, where they are engaged because they built the wrap around that garage, and students who park in that, students who live in that, in those particular apartments pay a premium to park in that Alumni Square garage. That makes that whole dynamic a good business plan. So they were very much engaged in that one. And as we go from that end of the campus, and just as much as we need parking at this end of the campus and increasing a lot, we need it at the north end of the campus as well because of the student density that's building at that end of the campus. And they will be involved in parking structure, parking dynamics at that end of the campus because some of that's university land, some of it's not. And so, yes, they're involved in the parking dynamic, but not so much in this particular project. So that's one. What was two?
So is 500 spaces at Creason adequate? It's part of a longer-term plan where ultimately we need one. $10 million in 2005 opened parking structure 2 for us. Today it gets us about half of that. So it really comes down to what funding is available and what we're able to support.
Right. So the question then would be, Barbara, I understand your point, I'm not arguing against your point, but is $37.50 added on to the, would that get us 700 spaces? Or, again, you know, there will be eventually a crossover of dynamics of economy of scale, and two, inflation, and we will need them possibly in the future. We have fantastic theater, we have fantastic on-campus activities, and parking will drive the ability for seniors, retirees that don't want to drive at night. This could be a huge economic engine to our.
Well, going to what Dr. Mansfield was speaking about to the North End of campus, I think there are opportunities that are becoming available in the short term that will help us reach that.
Anything else, Jennifer?
I agree with you. I just hate to see all of the students paying the cost of that, or all the other users. But am I correct? We are not. We're not filling up with people buying spaces either. Well, I know a lot of that new garage, the house is still barely knocked out. But there are spaces that have been sold there.
We currently have 450 students parked in the Illinois Square Garage. The challenge there is that the hotel is going to open there the next couple months, and a portion of parking is allocated to them, which means we're actually going to be decreasing student permit sales to the garage. So we have to meet the obligations that we have to the hotel to provide parking.
How much is being allocated?
It's 108 parking spaces for them.
And what's the total number of spaces available there?
490.
Some of that, you might go through the designation if you can recall. Some of that, the Alumni Center has access to for events in the Alumni Center. Some spaces there, some are commuter students, some are for the hotel. So that parking garage is pretty well designated.
It's got a lot of parking lot.
Just one more question. Is the 108 being paid for by the hotel? I mean, that since we're paying a bond issue, we pay for the hotel.
No.
The hotel won't pay for that 108?
Oh, no, we have no financial stake in the hotel at all.
No, I just want to know that. We're paying a bond issue that built that garage.
We're paying a lease.
We're paying a lease. Any way you look at it, we're paying for it. Is the hotel going to pay for the 108 spaces? Will that generate revenue to put toward us for an alternative parking?
No, that was one of the incentives to get a hotel to build there. They aren't paying for the land or for that part of the TIF. They're not paying for the
land. So we're basically paying for the lease that will provide the 108 spaces for the hotel. It seems somehow that a hotel could just pop it, maybe not be paying for the lease for its own parking places.
Keep in mind, this developer has invested over $25 million into hotels at each end of our campus, and we've invested zero in those properties, and we are the beneficiary of the
I understand that. I understand what that meant, so I'm just saying.
When you do deals, sometimes.
You know, we're passing costs on to students to pay for parking places that serve the profit generation of a hotel.
We also get TIF revenue back.
We get TIF revenue.
So some of that TIF revenue comes back in the form of, well, TIF revenues are taxes in college.
TIF revenues from the hotel will pay back the foundation for the, they still are owed $1.8 million for the acquisition of land in that multi-block area that made the north end of the TIF possible. Once the foundation has received its payback from its investment, then it certainly comes to the university and will help pay that fee for that part of the garage. And it will take 18 years probably for the foundation to get its payback, and then that TIF revenue will flow through us. You can only use TIF revenue to pay debt service on a project within the designated TIF space.
And only for public projects.
Only for public projects, so that TIF revenue will then begin paying that lease.
I have a couple comments before you go. First and foremost, I wholeheartedly agree with the comments made by Mr. Bailey and Regent Ridley in their discussion points. One thing I would like to maybe bring up and have just a minimal amount of discussion about is an article from the WKU Herald on March the 2nd in regards to proposed increases to our premium and non-premium faculty staff permit. Currently right now we have a premium of $185 going to $220 and non-premium $95 going to $110.
I guess my question would be, Dr. Tugge, is what kind of additional services or enhanced services can we as faculty and staff expect to see on this campus as a result of those fee increases? And I do want to compliment and commend Parking and Transportation for doing everything in their power to not raise those rates ever, I think, since 2008, if I'm correct. I'd just like to maybe know what we can expect from that rate increase.
One, I'd like to make a correction that apparently was an error in what was published. The faculty staff non-premium rate will go from $95 to $100.
Okay.
So we're only increasing $5 for that. And the reason the premium parking is going to be much more is because we have a 2.5-year waiting list for that. So it's again going to that congestion pricing. What we're going to be using those revenues for is supporting reinvestment into parking maintenance on campus, upgrading technology on campus. Part of that is adding revenue control equipment in the aviation slot. We'll still guarantee parking for permit holders, but we're going to allow visitors to come in and kind of filter in what's not being used. So technology. And we've also just incurred increased operational costs, not only on the technology side, but on the parking maintenance side as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gary. That leads us to our action item. We are very lucky we have a very active student government led by a very capable leader, Nikki. And they have recognized that we have problems with parks, and they are wanting to do something to change that. And I'll let Nikki make points if she wants to make points.
Thank you, Dr. Dennison. First and foremost, my main point when supporting this new fee is that the student body does support it, which is an absolute rarity. I want to make the comparison. Last year, Kiana Boca, who was the president of Cedar Regent, proposed a fee to support the Talisman. The Talisman yearbook now costs students $20, and she proposed a student fee to eliminate that cost directly to students. And that was shot down very quickly and very handily by student government. I think only a handful, if that, of senators voted in favor of this fee. So whenever I first proposed this fee to the student government, I honestly expected that same reaction. During my tenure in SGA, that has always been the case, that no one wants to see new student fees. But to my surprise, many students, a vast majority of students, even understood the need for the fee, and many even strongly supported it. After the first meeting, whenever I proposed this idea, just kind of handed it to our Senate, I had three senators meeting with me after the meeting, volunteering to do the research and write the resolution. So as SGA, we tried to take our time as much as possible to gather all the information necessary and gauge student opinion thoroughly before we vote on this. We took pretty much a month to try to gauge student opinion over social media. I encourage senators every meeting until we actually had to vote on it to talk to their friends to make sure they were getting opinions on what this would do. And overall, students were supportive, and that was what was reflected in the SGA vote. Parking has definitely been a problem here on campus. Speaking from the student perspective, it's just been a nightmare. Every year since I have been a part of SGA campaigns, people kind of have their laundry list of things that they'll fight for you as senator, president, vice president, whatever. And parking has always been on that list for every candidate because it's a problem we've all shared. And I know that enrollment has decreased overall in the university. That's just the reality that we've been facing. But those students that we have lost have largely been part-time students who, if they were on the main campus at all, were only here for a few hours a day. And as Dr. Tugas explained in her presentation, we've gained a lot of housing students. And you just think about it, you can take one space for a housing student, and they're going to leave their car in it for almost 24 hours.
They might run out for a couple of hours to go to work in the afternoon or evening, or to go out to eat or go to the mall. But for the most part, that car stays put. While when you have a commuter student or a part-time student, they're only there for a couple hours and then they leave, and someone else can use the parking space, and then they'll leave, and you might even get three or four cars in one parking space in a day. So that 250 extra housing students definitely is putting a tremendous impact on the availability of spaces. As student government, this fall semester, parking just sort of reached that tipping point with the 250 extra cars and the decrease we had always seen. Within our first couple of meetings of SGA, we had students coming to us complaining. We had them reaching out to us on social media, on our comment boxes, complaining about, I wasn't able to find a parking space. WKU needs to fix it. The people at Parking and Transportation can definitely attest, multiple members. I had multiple meetings with Dr. Tugas. A lot of our committee chairs had meetings with representatives down there trying to find out a solution to the parking problem we've experienced. And we really think that this new parking structure could be an answer and is a step in the right direction. I'm going to support this fee because students support this fee. As far as the details, as far as the location of the parking structure, we as students are going to leave that to the people, to the experts, so to speak. We're not really tied to any one location. I know that's been overall some, conversation about where it should go, but just overall, we think that something needs to be done, and we think that this is a step in the right direction.
Yes. Let me ask you a question. You made a comment that the student body is strongly supporting this.
Yes.
And that I wrote the word cool down here, but I'm not sure you did that. How did you engage students to get that feedback? Because, and did they attend these Senate meetings to voice opposition or support?
Well, we did. Our meetings are always open to students, and we made it very clear, and we even encouraged students to come out and attend our meetings because we were discussing these things. We really didn't have any, physical attendance at the meeting to where we discussed the resolution and approved it, and, that may have been, it was in the middle of all those snow days that we had, the cold weather. I mean, It's sad to say, but a lot of times just the cold weather can keep students in their dorm instead of coming out to any sort of event on campus. But we did reach out to students over social media. You can go back through the WKUSGA Twitter page and our Facebook pages that are open to the public, and you can see that for about that whole month of February into March, about at least once or twice a week, we were tweeting out, we were putting Facebook statuses, we're thinking about this parking structure fee, what do you think about it? Give us your feedback. And our responses were overall positive. Of course, not everybody was on board because nobody likes the student fee. But we didn't get the extreme backlash that I was expecting. Instead, the most popular comment that I received, either talking to people one-on-one or on social media, was, well, this really needs to be done. I understand our parking is just that bad. We need to take a step in the right direction. And so just basically social media, and then I asked the senators who made the decision to vote on it to talk to their peers and colleagues. And a lot of them told me they did, even during debate. Most of them said, I even think we had a student who stood in his dorm and polled people and said that, the response was overwhelmingly positive.
Nikki, I don't have any doubt you did a huge job of polling residential students. But the residential students constitute less than half the number of parking permits sold to students. There are more than years to have residential. Was there anything done to try to gauge the meters or any other district potential campus, anybody other than the residentials?
Well, that was...
Or did you hear from any of them?
Well, that was the intention over social media, was to gauge the commuter students. And we've heard a lot as far as in the fall semester hearing the parking struggles. That mostly does happen for commuter students. Housing students, it's a little bit easier because they don't move their cars as often. For commuter students, they're driving into this campus every day looking for a parking spot. And over our conversations over social media, students didn't specifically identify themselves as a housing student or a commuter student. but the response is still overall positive. And I know, you know, in the talks we've had, a vast majority of our people in SGA are computer students, and they've understood and have experienced the troubles of trying to find a parking spot when, you know, trying to drive into class, find a parking spot, and walk to your class would be a lot easier said than done.
Barbara asked two questions earlier that now go on this particular action item that is certainly important and a good response. One priority, certainly this project is not a university-sized priority, but we've got a lot more important matters to deal with. But this is a high priority for students, which is why we're having the conversation. This originated by students and for students and being paid for by students. And the other dynamic in that prioritization is there's not a mechanism for a student fee for anything other than student services. The CPE will not allow a student fee for an academic program or for compensation or for things that tuition should cover. They will allow a student fee approved by the student government of a given campus for a student service. And frankly, a parking structure is... We're not certain that it falls within the CPE parameter for student services. We think it will, but we'll communicate, I've already communicated to CPE with a formal request, providing this gets approved today, because they wanted that a few days ago in terms of their timeline. So there is a mechanism for student fees, for student services. There's not a mechanism for things that would be a much higher priority for the university. So everybody just needs to understand the way the money works. And secondly, regional campuses. Yes, it's unfortunate that students on regional campuses would receive this tax, if you will. But that's the nature of tax. Not always do you get immediate and direct representation from a tax that you pay. How many of us pay city school taxes when I've never had kids in school? You do it because it's important to the community. Final thing with regional campuses, students pay zero parking permits. They don't buy parking permits. They pay no money for parking lots on our regional campuses. So they have no fees. There's no enforcement. They have no fines. There's no financial variable whatsoever for students on our regional campuses for parking. This is a service we provide to all three regional campuses. In one case, in partnership with ECTC in Elizabethtown, but in Glasgow and Owensboro, there are parking lots that they are paying nothing to use. And so for them to pay a $30 fee as part of their tuition and fees portfolio is, in my opinion, not an unreasonable thing given the fact that they do not now pay anything for parking privileges. So, like everything, it's a little more complex than it might appear, and it's not always so simple as to say, well, if a student won't use it, they shouldn't have to pay for it.
I'd like to make an additional comment bouncing off that about the regional campuses. We did originally look at adding at least this fee partially, maybe fully, into the permit costs. And just the numbers, we would literally have to double permit prices in order to only charge the students who use it. And that's just too much of an increase. I can't even imagine the backlash we would receive by students by increasing permit fees that much in just a given calendar year. And also, in some of our benchmark universities even, for some universities, the parking fee is included in the student fee. So every student is charged for parking, whether or not they use it or not. That's just sort of a comment about the regional campus. It is unfortunate to charge people who will not use it, but it looks like there's just really no other way to make it financially viable.
Nikki, is there any correlation with that fee structure of $30 a month with what we were talking about in how the budget and the student activity fees increase in the
network fee? That I do not know. I don't know.
No, not a direct correlation, man.
I think I understand the question. We have a sequential
situation where what goes to Finance and Budget Committee is to approve the tuition and fees schedule, and it includes the $30 per semester, of which this committee is voting, so we have a little bit of an issue of what to include on the Finance and Budget Committee. Is that your question?
Well, my question really is, when you, in the aggregate, $30 here, $3 athletic, so much for the student center, is that as an aggregate total situation, is that more an issue of price sensitivity among the students?
I wouldn't know. I think whenever, this is a lot up front on the students with a total increase in the cost of attendance, but just the cost to go to school is placed out over the entire year. So, I mean, students know tuition is going to go up. It's going to go up every year. I don't know, and I really don't think the aggregate total increase will have a significant impact on enrollment.
Nice question. At one time there was a discussion of a $2 legal access fee. Is that gone away, or is that part of something else?
The intention now, and the president has spoken to me about this, and correct me if I'm wrong, is to find those funds internally. So we still intend to try to create that legal services center, as that is also equally important to students, but just not through a student fee structure.
The $2 fee is awkward, and it would be difficult, if not delicate, for both to get through the CPE process, and you can understand why. And so Nick and I have agreed that we will create this legal services dynamic through other means, and it will be maybe not recurring for a few years, and we'll measure it and see the response and so forth. But we will fund that internally and make sure that service is provided for the SGA resolution.
But just a comment, Mr. Hickey, and will correct me if I'm wrong, but and again, my concern was about the total cost for students. The $30 of $171 increase, that would raise the overall aggregate to 3.8% increase for students. It would be less than that without the fee increase. The $171 of additional cost next year would come from the state. Am I right, Anna?
Yeah. I got one question. I'm going to make sure I've got it clarified in my mind. $30 fee, and maybe this is to hang in the policy. $30 fee is allocated exclusively to construction costs, issuance of bonds, and its finance. Is there a student fee then that generates revenues that are generated from the operation of the parking garage?
No, those would go, from my understanding, would go just into the general parking and transportation fund.
Okay, but it didn't become the part of the university.
P&T, their budget covers maintenance on our parking facilities, lots, shuttle services, et cetera, janitors.
Yes.
Yeah, so
this we would sell permits to that facility and
this comes within the WKU budget.
As a whole, yes.
Yeah, I'm going to, yeah.
One last question. Maybe, and I don't know if Jared can ask it, but we have, I don't know how many spaces in Princeton now. We will not really get 500 new spaces with this $10 million rule. We will get minus whatever footprint it takes to build the garage.
I'd like to speak to that. One of the things that we've put together an estimate of $10 million, $9 million of construction portion of the estimate, and then the soft cost we have a billion. This is just a budgetary estimate based upon using other institutions like NTSU, but we based it on $18,000 per space, which is a high-end conservative number. If we looked at the $9 million and went to $15, we would actually, so when we actually, since this is not designed, we're going to build as many parking spaces as we can in the structure. It could be 600. I see it going over 600. So we can't answer that question until we actually get into design, do the numbers. This garage will not be a brick facade structure. We're over by a very industrial, out of the way, not visible. So it's going to be a concrete structure. So it's not going to have your, what we did is PS2, fancy, and have no community. It'll be a concrete, conservative, economical built parking structure. There's always some bravado, but what I'm trying to say is that I really believe because of the construction that we'll be doing at this location, since it's not in the hub or the heart of our campus, we will be trying to match the architectural details that we want to do in the heart of campus, so it's going to cost less. I use a $18,000 as a higher end or a conservative number. I anticipate it's more than that to try to win that game. But I can't tell you what that number is. So it's the way it's bigger.
To your point, in general, when you're building a parking structure on the top of a parking lot, the net increase in spaces is not the full size of the parking. But the majority of it, since the majority of it will be levels above it, the majority of it will be.
Okay. At this point, I'll entertain a motion for the approval of the City Government Association resolution for the student meeting for the parking structure.
I'll make a motion.
Okay.
Chair Dennison, I would like to make an amendment to that motion that we basically prorate the fee to allow distinction between full-time and part-time students.
Did you get a second to the motion?
I would second that.
So I have an amendment to the original motion. So we prorated between full and part-time students. Any discussion? All in favor? Any opposed? Okay, and then at this point, we'll go back and approve the motion.
The motion as amended.
So we need an approval of the motion with the amendment.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any questions? All in favor?
Yeah, I'm going to take 3 minutes. Prorated on the basis of what? Current hours relative to 16?
Prorated the way we prorate other fees to part-time students, which is based on 12 for undergraduate and 9 or
greater. And I'd like to make a comment as well about doing that. That's going to lower the number of potential spaces you'll be able to build. We don't know that number, we don't know the value. So I'm going to have to make an assumption that we will not be able to build as many spaces if we just increase the value.
Let's Student Affairs Committee, and when we come to the full board meeting in April, we will not have as extensive a presentation as Jennifer has made for the full board consideration, but all the two members of the board are here, so this is very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.